Begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Bonjour, and thank you for listening to the FlixWise podcast. I'm your bumbling host, Lady P, no relation to Master P. And joining me today is FlixWise co-producer and slide whistle fanatic, Mr. Martin Kessler. Hi, Martin.
Hello. I just cut my thumb off.
Nice. And I'm very pleased to welcome today's guest, karate expert and chief scribbler of thoughts over at fforfilms.net, Mr. Joshua Wilson. Thanks
Hello.
For coming on, Josh.
Thank you. Do we have our watches synchronized?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, God. On today's show, we have our first FlixWise favorite submission of 2017. And I don't know about you all, but I could use a break, something lighthearted to take my mind off all the threats to our national sovereignty and civil rights. And down the well of depression we go. Nope. I'm not doing it. Instead, let's talk comedy. I'm likely going to do a series of FlixWise favorites comedy entries, but today we're kicking things off with a submission from our guest, Mr. Wilson. For quite some time now, Josh has been dropping lots of subtle and not-so-subtle hints on social media about his desire to come on the show and talk about a certain 1964 Peter Sellers vehicle. And at long last, I've relented. Let that be a lesson to all of you who have made favorite suggestions. Eventually, I'll get around to it, I promise. And so, without further ado, get ready for lots of hijinks and silly French accents. Because on today's show, we're talking Blake Edwards' Pink Panther sequel, A Shot in the Dark. All right.
Yes.
Josh, tell us why you think A Shot in the Dark is worthy of the FlixWise favorites list.
All right. Well, this is one of my very favorite comedy films. I guess the basic plot, if you're not familiar with it, the country estate of millionaire Monsieur Ballon, played by the unflappable George Sanders. Everyone there, from the master to the chauffeur, is having an affair with everyone else. One night, as all the servants and residents are sneaking about from bedroom to bedroom, shots are fired. One of the housemaids, Maria Gambrelli, played by Elkie Summer, is found with the gun in her hand, still smoking, near the body of her lover, the chauffeur, Miguel. The bumbling Inspector Clouseau, played by Peter Sellers, as you said, is assigned to this case against the protest of Chief Inspector Dreyfus, which is Herbert Lom. When Clouseau arrives at the Ballon mansion to investigate the crime, he falls in love with Maria and refuses to believe that she could have committed the murder. His plan to uncover the true murderer relies on the genius idea of releasing her from custody and setting into motion increasingly absurd surveillance plans, seeking to trick the true murderer into revealing themselves. Instead, every time he releases her, another body is turned up, and again, every time Maria is present at the crime scene. Still, he follows the logic of the heart to the inescapable conclusion, the denouement, which is that everyone is revealed as guilty by accident. So, at any rate, this movie is, first of all, hilarious. And I think there's something to be said for that. One of the things about listening to your great podcast and you going through all of those wonderful films on the Sight and Sound list is that I think just comedies in general, but especially kind of farces, are really underrepresented in being considered as great films. This one, I think really, first of all, it's got peak Peter Sellers, 1964. It's kind of incredible to think that, you know, this was just 1 year after the first Pink Panther movie, but then the same year he, you know, was in Doctor Strangelove playing three whole roles. And also another lesser-known film called The World of Henry Orient. All that came out in the same year. And really, he's just at his comic peak here. So, I don't know. This is a great film. What do you guys think?
All right, he threw it to us, Martin. What do we think? do you want to go first?
Do I want to go first?
Yes.
I mean, historically on this podcast, comedies, I think, have been notoriously difficult to gauge. And I think that the kind of criteria we've sort of fallen back on is whether it's maybe quote-unquote about something, or else it's just like undeniably hysterically funny. And I don't know quite if I think this meets that criteria for me personally. Like, I saw it maybe for the first time 10 years ago during like a Pink Panther marathon, and all the films sort of blurred together in my mind and it didn't leave much of an impression on me. So watching it this week for the episode, I felt a little bit like I was watching it for the first time again. And again, it sort of didn't leave a big impression on me. And then I watched it a couple hours ago, and again, like I sort of feel like there are things I find funny, of course, and I think you're right that this is maybe a good showcase for Peter Sellers at his comedic apex. But I don't know, like there are things that I didn't like about the film, maybe some things in the direction, in the editing. I think some of the like longer comedic scenarios, I think, didn't really work for me. So that's where I'm at right now.
I do think this film offers plenty of silliness in the aftermath. Like, I feel like it offers more delights in the aftermath than in the actual viewing of it, because I do think that the silly accents are very silly and very, very repeatable. And that's always a delight. But I have to agree with Martin in that I think the failure of the movie, or in to the extent that the movie is less than hysterical or uproariously funny, I think a lot of that falls to the directing and the editing. And I just think that some of the scenes play out just for a little too long, and there's a little bit too much telegraphing of the jokes. You know, so for instance, when they're George Sanders and Peter Sellers are playing pool, you know, George Sanders says, will you put the cue away? You know exactly what's going to happen, right? And I think there aren't enough like clever little buttons on the scenes, you know, there aren't enough surprises to really make it funny. But I think what we probably need to talk about is how subjective humor is and how the role that that plays in deciding whether or not a comedy is great. And what if we can determine some kind of metric for what we're looking for in a comedy. And so maybe that can be our mission today, because this is, Josh, this is one of your favorite movies of all time, right?
Yeah, one of my favorite comedies.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, you know, so, I didn't, yeah.
Yeah, I think in answer to the points y'all are bringing up, I think that definitely the strength of the film is in the acting rather than in the editing and direction, like you're saying. You know, I haven't seen the entire oeuvre of Blake Edwards, but he doesn't always strike me as maybe the, you know, I don't know, most deepest.
Yeah, I think it's like aggressively mediocre body of
work. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's what, I mean, I think this film rises above the series that it's in significantly. I think that if you never had any of those other films, the first one, Pink Panther, to me is really dull. And the ones after it are just, you know, much more over the top in how silly they are. This one really has, I feel like, as far as just a comedic performance, it has the exact right balance between broad and very subtle moments. I mean, there's so many bits of business that you really see after, you know, all the stuff with his accent or whatever, which is much less pronounced in this film than it is in the later Pink Panther movies. But all that stuff you can kind of catch the first time you see it.
And I think, like, to the film's credit, like you said about the comic performances, like, actors I wouldn't necessarily have thought of as being well-suited to a comedy. Somebody like Herbert Lom, the Czech-British actor, who, like, I know him from The Dead Zone and from fighting Christopher Lee as Dracula. So to see him in this, I was sort of impressed. Or, of course, George Sanders, like you said, he's very dry, very deadpan. Yeah.
He's like the best straight man.
You know, I think actually, like, a lot of the performances in the film are very effective, actually. But, like, again, there's parts where I think that whole bit where he's, oh, I just stabbed myself with the penknife. And then you can almost feel like he says the line, it's funny, dot, dot, dot. Like, you can feel where the cut should be, and it just goes on too long. Like, you can feel it.
I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, I think it does sort of undermine some of those comic performances.
No, I completely agree. I think, what, Josh, when did you see this? When did you first see this?
Oh, boy. Probably, you know, when I was a kid, you know. Yeah. Like, maybe high school.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, do you
25 years ago.
Yeah, and how often do you revisit it?
Oh, every few years, I'd say, I'll pull it out. It's not something that I'm watching every week, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. That might be a little strange.
Shrine in the background.
Yeah.
Exactly.
This is a kind of, I think of these films as being, like, great children's classics. Like, I loved Pink Panther when I was younger.
Really? And the first one?
Well, I don't know if it was the first one or just the series as a whole. They kind of all blend together, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I think the first one is very different because it's this kind of supposedly sophisticated but not really sex comedy kind of thing. And then the later ones are just way, you know, they took all the elements that got started here, like, you know, Cato and Herbert Lom as the chief inspector, and they just, and the silly accent and things, and they just went way, way further with that, you know, in the later ones. So. Yeah.
Like, Clouseau, he wasn't the main character, I think, in the first one, right? He was sort of more on the side.
Exactly. I remember renting that one as, like, a preteen or maybe a teenager, and keeping with my fond memories of the Pink Panther as a child and watching the original and going, this isn't actually very funny. That one was surprising. And this one, I think you're right that it is sort of this happy middle ground between the total over-the-top slapstick farce and the kind of sexy crime parody sort of film.
I think it is in the Library of Congress, though, right?
Is it?
First one? Is it?
Maybe. I thought I saw
that. See?
The thing that makes these movies super memorable is actually not in this film, and that is the score. Right.
Well, the actual Pink Panther theme, but although this score is another Henry Mancini theme, and I'm pretty sure that the theme, if you watch the, you know, the opening credit sequence, that's again another one of those animated credit sequence, but doesn't have the actual Pink Panther character. I think that theme is used in the Inspector cartoon series too.
Right. Yeah. Actually, the opening credits are my favorite part of the movie. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
That Shadows of Paris. Yeah.
Yeah, and that song I actually like a lot. It's I think the movie is set up really well, the hopping beds, and it actually kind of reminds me of, do you know what I'm going to say?
Rules of the
Probably
game.
Probably not. Yes, oh, no. Thank you.
All right.
Well, I mean, I think it was based on a French play, right? The plot of this film. And somehow you could tell.
The original one,
Something French seeping through.
Yeah. The series. even though all of the actors are like British or whatever, and they all have fake French accents, and they live in France whatever.
It's like when you watch The Birdcage, and like somehow you know it's French without even knowing. Like, I don't know what that is.
It's true.
the way it builds yeah. to its big sort of the big farcical climax, everyone yelling. Like, I don't know, there is something about it that, like, I do like the kind of basic plot. I think it's actually yeah. a good comic narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think the structurally, the script is funny. And the actual crime, the whodunit story, is really funny. I love the how it culminates in the kind of the revelation that, as you say, everyone is guilty. And then the B plot with the Commissioner Dreyfus character plot having his own separate plot where he wants to kill Clouseau,
right?
And how they sort of meet at the end, I think, is actually really well done. But again. I think it's the movie is about 20 minutes too long, but I think just trimming it's a shaggy movie. Let's say that, like, as Martin says, like, it needs to something's off with the pacing. I think
I'll admit that the part where the pacing has always bothered me is towards the end. You know, when they're trying to build up the suspense with there's all, you know, like that Russian dance and the. They're
right.
in the dinner and there's that music and it just kind of goes on and on and on. And,
exactly.
you know, it's trying to. Yeah. So it's definitely it doesn't have the snappiness of like a Looney Tunes cartoon or something like that, which has a similar kind of comic vibe.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I also think another issue that contributes to my kind of. I don't know, ambivalence about the movie is that the joke density is kind of low.
Yeah, I think that has to do with where it comes from.
Yeah. Where it comes from?
Yeah, so, you know, being adapted from that, from what I can tell, there's not a whole lot of information out there that I was able to find, but, you know, there's a French play that was adapted into a English play, stage play, and then they adapted that, and then they decided after the Pink Panther was successful to turn it into a Peter Sellers Clouseau movie.
Right.
You know, so it was like it's being kind of grafted onto another plot. And I think you can kind of see that in the way that, to me, a lot of the funny stuff, I mean, it's got to have been just made up on the spot by Peter Sellers, you know?
Yeah.
It so much of it has an improvisational quality to it.
Yeah, like, I sort of think, like, I don't know if you ever see those Red Letter Media videos where they have Rich Evans, they say, like, oh, it's just, like, Rich Evans buffoonery where, you know, for 5 minutes straight, he can just knock stuff over and, like, make comedy kind of out of thin air. Like, I sort of thought mm-hmm. it's a little bit the same thing where you have, like, okay, there's a bunch of pool cues, be funny for the next 3 minutes,
yeah.
and it's, like, sort of, Peter Sellers, like, like,
yeah.
pulling comedy kind of out of thin air. Like, it's not necessarily, like, jokes in the script for 3 minutes, you know, it's, like,
right.
Knocking stuff over, or, like, some sort of, like, improvisational slapstick, which, like, I think there's a skill in being able to do that and be funny, like that's not a knock against Peter Sellers at all, but I think, like, he's not necessarily given mm-hmm. a lot of material to work with.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Peter Sellers. He's heralded as this kind of great comedy legend, this genius. Mm-hmm. Where do you think he stacks up as far as, you know, the other cinema greats, comedy greats? I mean, he's drawn comparisons to the Marx Brothers and Charlie Chaplin, which to me is a little sacrilegious, but where do you think he stacks up?
Well, you guys have a much broader knowledge of cinema than I, but I mean, as far as Chaplin comparison, I think at his best as an actor, he's, you know, is probably similar to Chaplin, but the difference there is that Chaplin was a total creator, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I don't think they really compare in terms of their, you know, contribution to cinema in any way. I think just as a comic actor and ability to create characters, you know, the other thing is that he so much of his comedy is about his voice too. You know, a lot of it's physical comedy, but you know, Chaplin, whenever he did stuff with his voice, it was a little squeaky and weird, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be very effective. I mean, like in The Great Dictator, I think that, you know, some of his speeches are very moving, and also Limelight, you know, like that sound work. But his most memorable stuff, of course, is Silent. So,
right.
I don't know. But as far as other, the thing about Sellers is I think after, you know, the 60s, he didn't get a lot of great chances for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, if he was notoriously difficult to work with.
Yeah.
It's funny because Josh also runs Wells Quotes, the Twitter account.
Yeah.
Right. And Orson Welles could not stand Peter Sellers, apparently.
Yeah, what did they work on?
I think, yeah, Casino Royale.
Casino Royale, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah, it's funny that you picked a movie that stars Welles' mortal enemy.
Yeah, Welles probably did okay. Anyways, it's all right.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, you know.
Well, he wasn't too worried about Peter Sellers.
I'm pretty sure he didn't pay him much thought. but, yeah, it's... funny thing. I don't know. I mean, but again, back to the question that I posed initially.
Yeah.
How do we gauge comedy? Because it is so subjective. And I honestly don't have a great answer for this, even though I would like to see more comedies talked about as far in the cinema canon, including farcical movies. I would like to see just... more silliness represented, and the art of physical comedy is certainly not lost on me. I enjoy a good pie in the face, you know, and a you know banana slip
or pie in someone else's face.
A pie in someone else, preferably, yeah. yeah, but at the same time, this didn't quite do it for me, but should it still be considered among the greatest of all time? That is the question that I pose to you, is that comedy has this very, very high bar to clear because it is tasked with doing one thing, and that is making us laugh. And so when a movie makes one person laugh but not another, how then do we gauge its greatness? Who wants to answer?
Oh,
Martin.
I don't know. I mean, good especially luck. With something like this, where we're talking about it like as much as a showcase for the performer. Like it's almost, you know, whether we want to put Peter Sellers on the FlixWise favorites list rather than the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, I don't know. Like again, we sort of tried working our way through this on the airplane and on some of the other comedies, but it's always like really, really tough. And like, I think at least with those, we had a kind of consensus on exactly how funny we thought those films were or how meaningful we thought those films were. Like here, we don't have a consensus, so that makes it a bit trickier.
Yeah, it is tricky. And I'll put it to you this way. Is the Pink Panther series alone, as it currently stands as a pop cultural work, is that alone? And not so much Peter Sellers, but that Inspector Clouseau character. Is he strong enough to merit a place on the list?
Well, see, that's the thing. I wouldn't have made that argument in the first place because I just love this particular movie, you know?
Okay.
Like I said, yeah. I think, though, that, like you said, I feel like you said that a lot of people have this attachment to it, kind of the impression of the entire series and kind of remember laughing at it, and usually when they're younger and things like that. I just feel like this movie has the kind of one thing I like about it, which I don't know exactly how to say, but it has a kind of ability to for like younger people and older people to watch it together, you know, because it's got, you know, the content in it isn't trying to push, you know, all of the bounds of being as edgy as it can or whatever, even for, you know, the early 60s. But it's, you know, it's got just enough, you know, adult sensibility to hang an actual plot on, so to speak, kind of. But then it also has enough just silly stuff that, you know, even a kid can get the joke, you know. So I think there's something valuable in that as well, personally. But that's not necessarily enough to meet your criteria that you're laying out here, I guess. I'm not arguing. So.
Well, like it is, like you mentioned, this came out the same year as Doctor Strangelove. Like, how do you think it might compare to that? Because, like, I think that's one comedy that is generally very highly regarded.
Yeah, it's like a comedy has to be a black comedy, right. You know, like that, before it's like, it has to have a serious point or be a satire of some really weighty subject matter to, whereas this one is just kind of like, look, hey, there's some human foibles that we should make fun of, you know, incompetence in government and police work and, you know, people being unfaithful to each other and all that stuff. You know, it's very simple, basic, everyday kind of stuff that turns into the subject of the humor. So, I don't know. That doesn't seem to make the great lists, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I agree with you guys about the editing and the direction. It's really, like I said, I do, and it's really it really comes down to Peter Sellers and the other performances in this particular film that make it so, you know, memorable to me.
Mm-hmm. It occurs to me, we have not spent nearly enough time talking about George Sanders.
Yes.
As listeners may recall, George Sanders is my favorite actor of all time. I'm in favor of allowing George Sanders any platform, any movie that gives George Sanders more screen time is okay by me.
See?
I'll just say that. Yeah.
It's like, I'm just going to stand here with a long face.
Yes. I don't think he does any acting.
I mean, he's good at it, actually. Like, I think he is. Like, when Clouseau's trying to hit the pool cue with the curved pool cue, and, like, it's so ridiculous, and the way he just kind of, like, looks out of the corner of his eye, like it's so ridiculous and he knows it, but he's not reacting. Like, that's kind of what makes it funny.
Well, that's my favorite. Like,
that kind of a springboard, yeah.
Yeah, the way that, you know, in that scene, besides the goofy stuff with the billiards table, you know, Clouseau is there in order to build up to an accusation, you know, to accuse him of doing all the murders. And he says it in this, you know, impassioned screaming, you know, you killed her in a writ of felis jage, you know, and then, you know, the next second he's just standing there. It's like the phone rings. It's like, no, oh, I think the phone is for you. You know, you just told, oh, you can use my car. You know,
right.
You want, he's just been accused of murder. And he's like, well, you can use my car. That's fine.
Yes.
You know, he's so cool.
Nothing if not polite. Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Let's not let an accusation of murder stand between us and politeness.
That's right. Yeah. Not between gentlemen. I do think he's about as droll as he's ever been. I think, you know, like in Journey to Italy, he spends the entire time just being bored and miserable. But I really think he looks so... he looks pissed off the entire time. I don't know. Maybe that was my impression, but he doesn't really. He usually has like a little like
twinkle in his eye or something.
Yeah, there is a little twinkle in his eye. There's like a little smirk that he usually has. There is no smirking here. He's just he looks so unhappy.
Well, it's very unpleasant business, you know, the murder in your house.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness, yeah. Well, I have to say one of the main reasons I wanted to talk about the movie is because George Sanders.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah, any excuse I can get, really. Yeah, so. I think I've sort of said my piece about it. I guess the only other thing that we can maybe talk about is the depiction of the swinging 60s and how well that holds up now. Which one of you let out that ugh? Because one of you, that's the one who's talking. That was Martin. Okay, Martin, go on.
Sorry.
Don't care. Yes, cries of disgust merit further explanation.
I wasn't offended necessarily or anything like that, but like just the whole like sequence at the nudist camp, like the joke is like, hey, naked people, like there's no joke.
Yeah.
It's like a prolonged.
No, I know.
I found it so like miserable to sit through personally.
I know.
You know, like,
it's true. Like,
I don't know.
And it's funny because that's the scene I remember from when I was a kid. Because I thought it was hysterical. It's naked people.
They did do the exact same scene in Zootopia, so it's still around.
right.
Still holds up.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very, it's not either sophisticated or aimed at, you know, grown-up people, I guess. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I feel like that kind of, I agree, it's not super funny, but it's the sort of level of humor has a place, I guess. You know, that there's, you know, and like, I guess that returns back to your question about subjectivity, you know, but that's not my favorite scene, actually, you know.
Okay,
again, I always come back to all of, you know, like all the exchanges between Clouseau and his assistant that, you know, is just incredibly long suffering and always answer, you know, it's like he's the guy who has to have the boss that's incompetent, you know, and he has to listen to what he has to, you know, all of those things I think have a little more resonance for an actual adult, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think if the movie had been centered around his assistant, it would be stronger. Wouldn't that be funny? If this guy, this poor guy who's like a competent detective has to deal with him with this horrible bumbling boss. I think that'd be funnier. Anyway.
What I really think might have elevated the film is if Blake Edwards directed it like everything was a real crime film except Clouseau. I think that might have, you know, if it took everything else like pretty much dead seriously and it just played out in this like completely farcical way with this one character and the plot would still be the same. Like, I think if it just had that tone, like, I think... again, we're getting back into the subjective humor, but I think that's what I wanted out of the film.
Right. I agree. I think also it might have been making fun of something that I just don't get the reference. You know, I'm trying to think of what if it's a specific parody of a movie, like even the song "Shadows of Paris," how it starts off. It seems like it's riffing on something and. It's something I'm maybe missing it. And so maybe I'm just not getting some of the jokes. That is definitely possible. But I agree. My inclination with this movie is to kind of be like, there's a movie here. There's a really good movie here, but I don't know that they made it. You know what I mean?
Well, have you seen The Man from Rio with Belmondo?
I haven't.
No.
Like, that's sort of a James Bond-type parody from... Mm. I think it's also 1964. That film's hilarious, and I think part of the reason why, like, a lot of its jokes hold up is, like, we still have James Bond. So, like, okay. I don't know, like, if you're right that it's sort of parodying things that have maybe disappeared, like, that could be part of it. Because I don't know, if you ever see Man from Rio, like, it's still hilarious.
okay, yeah, I will have to check that out. I mean, there's still... what should we call it? Poirot? The detective?
Poirot?
Yeah, Poirot.
Or Agatha Christie?
Yeah, the Agatha Christie. Poirot. Like, I think that's roughly what they're parroting, but is there a specific...
I don't know. I just always took it to be kind of, you know, the police are somewhat corrupt. The, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of a general statement about... you know, how absurd it is to seek justice when you've got, you know, all these heartless people and rich elites and, you know, I don't know. It's just not, but it's not taking that topic and making a serious point about it. It's just like, well, hey, this is a silly world we live in. Here's the police, you know, and here's the rich people and they're all just a little bit goofy like you and me, you know?
Yeah. fair. Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. I think we should put it to a vote. In case, I don't know. I feel weird not letting a George Sanders movie into the FlixWise favorites list. I have to be honest. I feel like I have such strong ties and loyalty to George Sanders that I feel like I have to let it in. But at the same time, the only metric I have for judging a comedy, basically, is it funny? And I have to say, I don't think I laughed enough for this. And not just, I mean, I obviously dark comedies, you get a slight chuckle maybe, or like a grin, but I think for a farce, you need some belly laughs, and I don't know, it didn't quite land for me. But Martin, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm basically in the same boat. Like, I didn't hate the film, like, I got enough laughs out of it, but like, I think just like on the scale of comedies I've seen, like, for me, it's just not quite there. Like, I think maybe you could say it's maybe the best or standout of Pink Panther series, or
mm-hmm.
but I don't know, I think like even within Peter Sellers' body of work, Being There, like, I think it's like Being a really there. Fantastic
oh yeah,
you know, the comedy, it's not the same, it's like much
no.
much more low key, but it also has other ideas, and it's like a very impressive performance too. Like, I think, I don't know, I feel bad saying it, but like The Shot in the Dark, for me, it's just not it. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. But Josh, we'll give you the final word. Even though Martin and I are maybe not super gung-ho on this movie, we still want people to check it out. And let us know what they think. But so give the listeners a reason, like your basic pitch, your elevator pitch for why people should go check out this movie.
No pressure, right?
Okay. No pressure.
So yeah, it's all about Peter Sellers' performance again. I know I'm repeating myself a little bit, but you know, to me, every time I watch this movie, I see another little subtle thing that he's done, or a little inflection. You know, the business when he first comes in the mansion to check out the crime scene. You know, if you watch all of the little things he does after, you know, of course, first falling in the fountain right outside their home. But, you know, if you watch all the little things he does, he's just, you know, creating a real comic character there that and his responses, the way that he plays off of the other characters who, you know, are mostly until towards the end really low key. But the way that he does that, just, it's, to me, is one of the great comic performances. It's one of his best comic performances, I think, and it's just one that it keeps making me laugh.
I love it.
So,
all right, listeners, you can decide for yourselves. Okay, and that's the way we frame it, FlixWise. That is, listeners, do you think it's criminal that I denied A Shot in the Dark entry into the FlixWise favorites list? Shall I be sentenced to a lifetime of sitting on uncomfortable furniture? Come let me know on our website, FlixWise.com. Or you can like us and leave us a comment on Facebook at Facebook.com/FlixWise. Or you can follow our merry band of nudists on Twitter. The handle is @FlixWise. But before you do all of that, please, please go to iTunes, rate us, and leave us a nice comment. It really helps other cinephiles find our show. And, otherwise, we're going to have to stick Monsieur Clouseau on you. So rate us or else. So much torn clothing. The next couple of FlixWise favorites entries are going to be comedies. Again, I think we could use a good laugh right now. I know we have Monty Python coming up, possibly an Elaine May film, and maybe some other comedies. You can send me suggestions if you want. And, of course, there's also our next Sight and Sound film, which I believe is going to be Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know, right?
A great comic director,
Stanley. Yes!
Barry Lyndon is hilarious.
Oh, it is hilarious. It is, though. I love that really, like, dry sense of humor at the beginning.
Yes. So stay tuned for that. Until then, Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, sorry we didn't love the movie as much as you do, but it's never a bad time watching a George Sanders movie. You didn't make it, exactly. but no, certainly we are not here to poo-poo anyone's favorites. Well, we, you know...
You're not. Sorry.
It still has George Sanders. That's all I'm saying. Martin, you heartless monster.
I am.
We'll see you next time. Try not to knock anything over.
I'm going to go get my thumb sewed back on.
All right, great.
Oh.
Okay, I'm going to start that over again. Okay.
You can't see, but I'm knocking things over.
Oh, no.
Okay.